You are listening to We Saw the Devil, an investigative and conversational true crime podcast that deep dives into fascinating criminal cases that are solved, unsolved, or ongoing. From America's Lori Vallow to Germany's Armin Mivas, we examine and discuss the world's most shocking cases. If you're enjoying the show, don't forget to follow us online. Check us out at WeSawTheDevil.com and WeSawTheDevil on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget, you can become part of the show by backing us on Patreon. Hello everyone, you are listening to We Saw the Devil. This is Robin, and I am here with a surprise episode. I know in the show notes of the last episode that I said that this one would be Natural Born Killers. However, I don't know if you realized or not, but that is a rabbit hole when it comes to true crime. Not only is the original script by Quentin Tarantino based on Bonnie and Clyde, when Oliver Stone took the script, he changed almost everything and brought in a lot of true crime influence. We have different characters. The storyline itself is based on a case, which I will be featuring in this episode. It just seems to never end. So that episode is currently a work in active progress. I promise it is coming. And dare I say, I'm actually really excited about this episode. I think it's going to be really, really interesting. But before we get into it, guys, let's just get our usual housekeeping out of the way. Our website is wesawthedevil.com, and from there, you can find us across all social media platforms, every podcast platform where you can find us. You can also listen to us on YouTube. I mean, it pretty much is the hub for all things WSD. Also, you can find our Patreon, which, if you're liking the show and you want to support us, check out our Patreon, guys. For as little as $3 a month, that's literally the price of a cup of coffee. You can get cool stuff like stickers, merch, notebooks, true crime gifts, just a lot of different stuff, plus a cool Facebook group just for patrons. Also, just started a Discord, so I hope to do a lot of really cool interactive things on Discord. And also, if you are loving the podcast, can't quite commit to backing it financially, please just pop over to iTunes, Apple Podcasts. You can do so from your phone or a computer if you don't even have an iPhone, and leave a 5-star review. That is the single most important thing that you can do for any podcast that you love, because it actually assists with metrics and the algorithm that assists us on our end, right? So that would be greatly appreciated. So today's episode, the topic actually holds a very close space in my heart. And let me just bring you inside my world for just a moment. Fun fact, I named my black lab Bathory. And let me tell you, it has been super fun whenever I take her out to new places, like a drive-thru to grab coffee, a new vet's office. Everyone obviously first asks, oh, you know, what's her name? And I usually let out an exasperated sigh and say, you know the countess who was accused of murdering girls and bathing in their blood to retain her youth? I mean, you know how the general populace responds to that, right? Like, deer in headlights, bum, 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 please hang up and make your call again later. Like, that is exactly how they respond. And obviously, I didn't take that into consideration when I named her, but I love her name, Bathory. In any case, they usually say, okay, and then just gloss right over it, thinking I am insane. But my favorite was when I used to take her to the Dutch Brothers drive-thru in Portland. And I mean, guys, if you have a Dutch Brothers nearby, you know that it's like the hiring managers went to their local Abercrombie and Fitch and was like, give me your most attractive and most extroverted. I mean, those employees, and I mean, each and every single one of them, bless their hearts, they are all like human versions of golden retrievers. And if by chance one of you has or currently works at Dutch Brothers, please, please, please tell me how you can be so happy. Like, I want tips from you. So that brings us to Elizabeth Bathory, or Elizabeth Bathory for us English speakers, which I will be referring her to for the remainder of the episode. After a literally limitless number of films, plays, poems, and books have been written about her, she is also known as the Blood Countess, Lady Dracula, and the Blood Lady of Katiche. She has been given countless nicknames just based on what she was suspected of doing. And I use the word suspected in H1 and bold formatting. But was she actually a victim of the patriarchal culture of her time? Or was she just really one of the most vicious and bloodthirsty female serial killers to have ever lived? I mean, that's kind of polar opposites there, right? Elizabeth Bathory was born on August 7th, 1560, on her family's estate in Hungary. Now, they were a very powerful Protestant family, Calvinist, actually. And they were one of the most prominent families in the entirety of Eastern Europe. Her father and mother, Baron George VI Bathory and Baroness Anna Bathory, respectively, more or less controlled its own like miniature kingdom within Hungary, which consisted of modern-day Transylvania and Romania. Her uncle, Stephen Bathory, was the king of Poland. So they were, in fact, the most well-connected. As was the custom at the time, royalty sometimes married within their own families. I mean, everyone knows the inbreeding jokes, right? So generational inbreeding. Elizabeth's mother and father were actually first cousins, both from the Bathory side of the family. This could actually potentially explain why she was plagued with health problems throughout her life, but especially during her childhood. And fun fact, Elizabeth Bathory is actually remotely related to Vlad III via marriage, whom many of you know as Dracula himself, Vlad the Impaler. But as a child, Elizabeth would have epileptic seizures. She was frequently ill, and she would reportedly go into fits of white hot rage on a dime. Very little is actually known about her childhood, but the urban legend and myth has seemingly just multiplied and taken on a life of its own throughout the years. First, it was reported that her uncle taught her Satanism and witchcraft. Then it was a satanic doctor who attempted to treat her epilepsy with healthy blood taken from the peasants, applied to Elizabeth's forehead via a piece of their own skull. And even though we are talking about the 16th century here, I think it's pretty safe to say that that is most likely bullshit. What we do know, though, is that she lived an aristocratic and privileged life, getting the best education afforded to members of her class. She spoke four languages fluently: Hungarian, which was her native language, Greek, Latin, and German. And to reiterate, there is zero hard evidence of her demeanor at this time. It's widely reported, and you may find this online on various YouTubes about videos about her, that when she was a child, she saw a man sewn into the belly of a horse, and that she laughed. She was completely unfazed by violence. But there is actually no record of this. And I will explain that later at the end of the episode. Now, she was betrothed to marry Count Fernák Nádasi, a member of a different powerful Hungarian family, when she was only 10 years old. Fernák was 15 at the time. At age 13, she got pregnant by a peasant boy the year before she was set to marry Fernák. Now, considering that Elizabeth was nobility, that was a pretty big faux pas. You don't get knocked up right before you're about to marry, right? I mean, I think that we can say it's safe to say that kind of the same thing in 2021. Her parents forced her to hide in their castle and wouldn't allow her to leave a few designated rooms for fear of being spotted for basically her entire pregnancy. So she gave birth to a baby girl, and the child was actually secretly given away. In 1575, at the age of 14, she married then 19-year-old Count Fernák Nádasi, and there were more than 4,500 guests at their wedding, treated to lavish feasts and celebrations, and the entire shindig lasted for 3 days. And the couple first stopped at the Nádasi Castle, but they eventually moved to the Kastély, and this was a wedding gift from the Nádasi family. The Kastély Castle was built in the early 13th century on top of just a super dramatic hill, like something that you would see out of a Hammer horror film or one of the old times, you know, like the looming castle on the hill. Below was the medium-sized village of Kastély. Now, Fernák and his family did not actually own the castle. They bought it as a wedding gift for Elizabeth. Not only that, but they bought like 17 surrounding villages as well. Can you imagine? Like, hey, babe, no biggie, but, you know, I just bought you a huge new castle and 17 little peasant villages. How you doing? That was her wedding gift from her and her new family. And to put this into context, the Bathory family was like tenfold more wealthy and connected than the Nádasi family. And the Nádasi family still managed to buy an extra castle and 17 villages. So Elizabeth Bathory came from literally what we would consider now in modern day, like the 1%. And this castle was important because it was a surveillance post. The road that went through this was a road connecting Hungary to Moravia, now known as the Czech Republic. It was also a direct route to Vienna, which was the closest, biggest city. Now, it's unknown whether Elizabeth enjoyed her new digs or not, but what is known is that Fernac was never home. He became a commander of the Legion of the Hungarian Army. And for historical context, this was a very, very, very violent time during the Ottoman-Hungarian Wars. And considering that Elizabeth was, by all accounts, incredibly well-read, vibrant, and smart, she was probably bored out of her ever-loving mind. I mean, all she had to do, she had to tend to various estates. Maybe she enjoyed the intricacies of court life. I mean, who knows? In this case, this is supposedly where her reign of terror began. The legend goes that in 1585, a young servant girl accidentally combed Elizabeth's hair too hard. Elizabeth supposedly slapped the maid so viciously and brutally that blood spattered onto the back of Elizabeth's hand. Feeling some sort of way about it, Elizabeth apparently believed that it made her skin look more vibrant and younger. So clearly, the obvious next move was to order the young maid to be executed and drained of her blood. Said blood was then supposedly collected into jugs and poured into a bath where Elizabeth eventually lounged. Did this happen? Who knows, but I would not put my money on it. Now, Fernac was basically gone for 10 full years, like newlyweds, and he's just, nope, sorry, babe, I'm joining the military, peace. And he enjoyed an immense amount of success in the military. With his sheer brutality in the face of his enemies, it earned him the name the Black Knight of Hungary. And he was specifically known for the practice of battlefield impalements, just like the infamous Vlad the Impaler, whom, by the way, Fernac was related to by marriage. Now, since Fernac was gone, Elizabeth was left behind to manage the family estate and defend her husband's affairs. And she also tended to the local people and heard grievances. She even provided medical care and advice to destitute citizens. Once, and this was actually documented, she volunteered to translate for citizens whose first language was not Hungarian. And by all accounts, the citizens loved her. She was known to intervene on the behalf of peasant women, including one woman whose husband was captured by the Ottomans, assisting with her finances and attempting to assist in negotiating for his release. And she also helped another woman whose daughter was raped and impregnated with her medical care, and also attempted to bring the rapist to justice, to local justice. And all of the people knew Fernac due to his military success. And Elizabeth and Fernac kind of became that 16th century power couple, like Brad and Jen and Angelina and Brad. I mean, Brad's connected to everybody. But yeah, like that power couple. And the war was long, and I mean that literally. I mean, so literally, in fact, that it ended up, the official like name of it ended up being the Long War. And what happens in long wars? Well, it can deplete the economy of a nation. And that's exactly what happened to Hungary. Except it didn't happen to Elizabeth. Fernac was so successful in his battles that he would continuously shower Elizabeth in riches and treasures from the Ottoman Empire. They ended up growing to be so wealthy from Fernac's military escapades that they ended up lending money to the Hungarian Empire just to keep the country afloat financially. And rumors also began to circulate that Fernac taught Elizabeth methods of torture. Knives under fingernails, ripping out the fingernails, cutting off fingers, hot pokers, slicing them with knives. Again, that was just rumors. Now, also during this time, while Fernac was gone, the Turks were conducting raids into Elizabeth's territory, into Hungary. And on multiple occasions, with Fernac gone, she was forced to command the local guards and defend their territory. And she was known for bringing fleeing peasants into her home, into the castle, and providing them with medical care, food, and clothing. From 1585 to 1595, Elizabeth bore 5 children. But very little is actually known about them. We have their names and, you know, occupations later and who they married. And that's pretty much, based on my research, about it. So what happened? How did Elizabeth Báthory become synonymous with pain, torture, and blood? Well, here's where it started. Fernac Nasidy died in 1604 at age 48 after being married to Elizabeth for 29 years. He complained of leg pain, supposedly from an infected wound that a frontline prostitute had inflicted after he refused to pay her. In any case, he died from an unknown illness. Elizabeth, then 43 years old, became the most powerful woman in all of Central Europe. A And this is also when all of the rumors about her killing servant girls began to surface. You see, before Fernak's death, he had entrusted his estate and heirs to his closest associate, a very powerful man by the name of Georgie Thurzo. And Thurzo also happened to be Elizabeth's cousin. He was King Matthias's highest-ranking official, and rumors about the servant girls looking for work going missing began to circulate directly after Fernak's death. It turns out Elizabeth was the one who was supposedly responsible. And this is where the real legend of the Countess Elizabeth Bathory began. Georgie Thurzo ordered two notaries to go across Elizabeth's lands, all across her 17 villages, and collect testimonies from witnesses. Apparently, they found more than 300 witnesses willing to talk about the atrocities. These included priests, noblemen, different castle employees, as well as commoners. According to these testimonies, Elizabeth's first victims were the adolescent daughters of local peasants. Supposedly, they were lured to her home with a promise of paid work as servants. Later, after Elizabeth opened up a gynecium, or basically a school for noble girls to learn courtly responsibilities and etiquette, it was said that she then began to kill those girls. Many witnesses claimed that there were nightly abductions where adolescent girls were pulled from their beds and taken in the middle of the night. Others claimed to be former servants themselves of Elizabeth's household and that managed to escape, and recounted hearing terrifying screams, gory scenes, and blood-drenched castle walls. Each supposed account of Elizabeth Bathory's torture session began the same way. A maid or servant would unknowingly make a small mistake, and that would bring down the entirety of Elizabeth's wrath. The most common incidents from the witness statements included beatings, burnings, mutilations, and all of this included ears, eyes, and noses. It was said that Elizabeth would bite the flesh off of faces, arms, and shoulders, that she would throw people into her dungeon, the girls into her dungeon, freezing and starving them to death. She apparently was also a fan of using needles and fire. And again, it was said that Fernak taught Elizabeth the ways of military torture, and because of her dark, disturbed nature, she took to it like a moth to a flame. But apparently, Elizabeth Bathory truly particularly relished in the psychological torture of her victims. After piercing and prodding a victim with needles, she would reportedly say, quote, "If it hurts the whore, she can pull it out." As I mentioned a moment ago, most punishment and torture would come from a minor mistake that a servant had made. A cook would be burned. A seamstress would be stabbed with long sewing needles. A maid would be whipped and beaten or strangled. And depending on her mood, Elizabeth may send them to her torture chamber in the bottom of the castle, where she and or her accomplices would subject them to even more vile acts, up to and including having their entrails ripped out while they're still alive, or even cannibalism. Afterwards, the remains were either buried on the castle grounds, in a local graveyard, or even fed to the castle's dogs. The excuse given was typically that of cholera. And I mean, at that time, would anyone care if a peasant girl went missing? No one would dare bring charges against royalty. I mean, imagine someone bringing murder charges against Queen Elizabeth. It was more or less the same thing, but on a far, far grander scale. Also, witnesses named several people who supposedly assisted in procuring and disposing of girls for Elizabeth. The most suspected one was Anna Darvulia, a woman whom Elizabeth met in Vienna after Fernak's death in 1602. Due to Anna's interest in homeopathy, herbs, and medicine, it was rumored by the villagers, and this is fact, that Anna was a witch. Not only that, but people believed her to be satanic and a terrible influence on Elizabeth. After Fernak's death, many witnesses claimed that Elizabeth changed. She went from the already dark, cruel, and callous soul that she was to pure evil incarnate. And the exact number of young women supposedly tortured and killed by Elizabeth Bathory is unknown. But the magic number that keeps circulating and popping up in various documentaries and books is 650. So in 1609, Anna, who had moved in with Elizabeth after Fernak's death, died of a stroke. And let's go back to Georgie Thurzo. Now, he collected his witness statements and he brought them back to the royal court. King Matthias could no longer ignore it. I mean, 300 people being like, hey, there's this crazy lady in a castle killing people. Like, you should probably take a check on that. didn't care until there was supposedly like nobles involved, right? But the reasons are very complex and we will get to there momentarily. On December 30th of 1609, Elizabeth Bathory and four of her personal servants were arrested, and that includes three female servants and one male. The servants were put on trial in 1611, and three of them were executed after confessing to the crimes under extreme torture. Now, Thurzo, you know, being Elizabeth's cousin and being her dead husband's like closest confidant and friend, debated holding a trial for Elizabeth. But after a lengthy correspondence with Bathory's sons-in-law and own son, he decided that it would cause too much of a scandal for the nobility all across Hungary. Elizabeth Bathory was eventually confined to her chambers at Castle Kastis. And in a letter that Thurzo wrote to King Matthias, he claimed that Bathory was shut away in her room and that it had been bricked up, save for a small door for her chamber pot and also food. In reality, she had full freedom to move about her castle as she chose. Elizabeth remained there until she died on August 16, 1614, at the age of 54. Now, it is important to mention that there is zero physical or written evidence of any torture or murders having taken place at the hands of Elizabeth Bathory. Out of the 289 supposed witnesses that came forward, 260 of them said they had no firsthand knowledge and that they were merely passing on information of what they were told by someone else who heard it from someone else. We're talking second and third hand information on almost 90% of these witnesses. Her servants were tortured into confessions after they were arrested. And I think the biggest telltale of all is the fact that if Elizabeth Bathory had been found guilty and been sentenced to death, if she had gone on trial for this, if she had been convicted, all of her lands would have been seized by the king. However, imprisonment allowed her family members to take control of her possessions. Remember how her sons-in-law knew about her arrest and negotiated for house arrest? King Matthias himself, the royal court, owed her money. Remember how she and Fernak would basically kept the country afloat during the Hungarian-Ottoman Wars? They owed her money. They never paid it back. They didn't want to pay it back. And then Bathory's support of her nephew, the Prince of Transylvania, was also in direct conflict with King Matthias. Conflict of religion has been a thing in every inch of the globe basically since the dawn of time. Elizabeth was Calvinist, Protestant. This is around, without going into a full-on history lesson, the Catholic Church was getting involved. Hungary was Catholic, then was not Catholic, and then became Catholic again. And people fight over religion, and that's basically what happened. And Elizabeth, being Protestant, being a Calvinist, could have definitely placed her in danger. And it's my personal opinion, based on God, like the 40 books I've read about her and hundreds of hours that I've been obsessed with Elizabeth Bathory, that that's probably what happened. I mean, imagine the rights that women had at 1600. She became the most powerful woman in all of Central Europe. Her husband died, and here she was owning 17 different villages. That just could not stand. But that's not to say that Elizabeth Bathory was completely innocent. In 1602, a priest wrote a letter that discussed the excessive cruelty exhibited by both Bathory and her husband towards their servants. She did, in fact, meter out cruel punishments to them. The testimony against her could have actually included true facts and true stories about how harshly she acted with the lower classes. But don't forget that that was actually completely legal at that time due to her status as nobility. And then we also have to take into account, because at the end of the day, guys, when you think of Lady Bathory, of Countess Elizabeth Bathory, what do you think of? You think of a woman bathing in a bathtub full of blood. That's what you think of. That's what everybody thinks of. But here's the thing. She died in 1614. The very first account of her big killing torture spree happened in the year 1729, more than a century after her death. It was from the book Tragica Historia by Jesuit scholar Laszlo Tarocsi. And according to Tarocsi, Elizabeth would kidnap young peasant women from the nearby town or lure them to the castle, you know, with a promise of work, and then would torture them to death. She was then said to have ordered her slaves to gather their blood in buckets and fill a bath so that she could bathe in the blood of virgins to retain her youth. This story by Tarocsi, the legend, this legend upon which her entire character has been founded, happened and was created more than a century after her death. So everything that we know and everything that people think of when they think of Elizabeth Bathory was created more or less 100 years after her death. And also being related to Vlad the Impaler, even if only via marriage, probably didn't help her case much too throughout history. But that is it for Elizabeth Bathory, guys. What do you think? Do you think that she was potentially guilty of torturing hundreds, up to 650 peasants and bathing in their blood? Or do you think that it was the case of, we can't have a powerful woman with all of these lands, she's weak, we're going to take them. We're going to put her in her place. Also on that, her lands were not in fact seized. She was allowed to give them to her own children, to her heirs, and then they did with them as they pleased. However, she did die in confinement. But that is it for today, guys. One of the next episodes coming out is the Pam Hupp case. So I originally did that case. I did it in 4 different segments. They were about 20 minutes a piece. I'm actually going to re-record the Pam Hupp series into 1 episode that's easy to follow from A to Z and include the update because Pam Hupp will be going to trial. So if you missed the Pam Hupp coverage, this is just as crazy and insane as the Lori Vallow case. This woman is batshit. Like, I have no other words to describe Pam Hupp other than she is just utterly batshit. So expect that in the next couple days. And yeah, if you have a case that you would like us to cover, our patrons get first dibs in suggesting cases to cover, on suggesting cases, voting for cases, and so on. So hit us up, wesawthedevil.com. We saw the devil across all social media. And patreon.com/wesawthedevil. Until next crime.